That was interesting. Okay, people are just managing to get in, find a space. Now, as you all know, that I do not decide on what I'm going to talk about until the very last moment, and I do that out on purpose in order to give some sort of originality to the talks, trying to find a subject I've never talked about much before, and how the Buddha's ideas and values apply to these things. And a lot of times it's the type of talk, it develops from experiences which I've had very recently. Like 2 weeks ago, when I last gave a talk here, I did mention to people that I just returned from UK and being caught in a traffic jam and being late for the talk at a temple in South East London. I gave a talk on Buddhism and traffic jams. I will not repeat that talk because I believe that one is online. It's a very good talk because these are things you have to experience in your daily life. Not so much in Perth, but every now and again there's traffic jams here, but certainly in many other cities of the world. And this afternoon that I was invited to attend the opening of the Cancer Wellness Association, which has got new premises over in Railway Street in Cottesloe. And I was reminded, I've been going to that place for 25 years, teaching meditation and giving talks there, and they come once a year to Bodhinyana Monastery to do some meditation. So because I've been a long-standing supporter, they invited me not only to come to the blessing this afternoon, but also to do some holy water blessing of the new premises. So I thought the title of tonight's talk would be Buddhism and Holy Water. To do a quirky topic and just to show how sometimes some of these old traditions, some of these rituals and ceremonies, which people who look at themselves as being really sophisticated decide they will not enjoy. And what a waste of an opportunity that is, because in all of our traditions, all of our cultures, we have some of these little rituals. If we know how to make use of them, they can be not only beneficial, but a great deal of fun as well. And what's the point of any religion or spirituality if it doesn't make you happy and make you have fun and make you even laugh? And for those of you who know, the word in Pali for an enlightened being, is called an arahat. And I mispronounce it. I call it a ha 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 arahat. In other words, a happy being who's willing to laugh and see funny side of things. And to bring joy into religious practice, into spirituality, is really important. So I have great fun when I do holy water blessings, like I did this afternoon. I managed to soak a former judge. I made sure he's a former judge, because if he was a present judge, he might sue me and I might get into big trouble. That was Justice Murray. The Premier was there, but I actually soaked his bodyguard. And I think he wasn't laughing at all, so I decided I'm not going to go any further. But I did this whole blessing of the whole premises, with some holy water blessing. And straight away, all these people working there, it was just a little bit quirky, a bit fun. A Buddhist monk was going in there, blessing everybody, blessing their computers to make sure they don't crash, blessing their finance officer, so they always got lots of funds. Blessing the food, which they were going to give to people afterwards so it tastes more delicious. Why not? And the point is that when sometimes people say, what's that got to do with religion? What's that got to do with enlightenment? What's that got to do with the high spirituality of Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, Abhidhamma, and all that boring stuff? The reason is because it is a vehicle where we can take things like compassion and peace, inspiration, to another level. Because when I was doing the sprinkling, I was actually creating a lot of happiness and peace and also inspiration in this place. This is a place where people will be coming. You know, they have medical treatment for cancers, but they need something much more in life than just science. They need some heart, some love, some fun in their life. And that's what I wanted to add into the Cancer Wellness Association New Premises. That was the whole meaning of the spiritual, of the holy water, to add something else. You know that sometimes I used to be a scientist, and I say used to be because science is just not good enough anymore. It's got no heart to it. There was a magazine in our monastery, in our office, which I saw about how to overcome heartbreak by medication. Little pills you can take. There's great possibilities. So that when you lose your partner or you split up from somebody else and you have the heartbreak of losing the person you've fallen in love with, just take a pill and all that goes away. And you can even stop the other part of it, falling in love in the first place. They say falling in love is like obsessive compulsion disorder. You're solely obsessed with a person. You can take a pill for that. Is that the sort of world you want to live in? Or is it the sort of world you want to live in when you can fall in love and you can experience the heartbreak as well when you are a human being with all, all of the idiosyncrasies of human life? You know, being able, you know, to cry and to laugh, to smile and to weep as well. Now, this was so important to me to get people to be human beings again rather than for you to try and have human development so you can change yourself to be some idea of who you think you should be. That one of the books, which has just been issued, I think I told this story last fortnight, but who cares, here it comes again, is Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. That's the title of the book. And the reason we had that book was because there was, I don't know if she's here this evening, a young lady on one of my retreats, meditation retreats, and she was very, very upset that she always had to be happy. Because it's really awful, isn't it? If you go on a retreat and everyone else is having a good time meditating and you're not, and she was so upset, she said, I don't feel happy. Why are you trying to make me happy, Ajahn Brahm? I'm not trying to make you happy. Yes, you are. You say I should be delighting in the meditation. I should be smiling, and I don't feel like it. And so in order to make the point to her, I went in to my office immediately, which was next door to where we were doing the interviews, opened up the computer, and I typed out on Buddhist Society West Australia letterhead a grumpy license. And the grumpy license had beautiful letterhead on, said, "This license," a nice font, "this license grants to the person underneath," which was Veronica something, I won't say her full name, but she used to run the Kalyanamitta group. But I won't say her full name. Permission to be grumpy. Permission, a license to be grumpy at any time, for any reason or no reason at all, signed Ajahn Brahm, someone she respected. So she could be grumpy whenever she wanted. Now she took that and she saw that now she was allowed to be grumpy, now she was happy. I know psychology. And because I talked about that in many talks, and that became one of the great stories in my latest book, and that became the title of the book, Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. Because usually in the United States they say, don't worry, be happy. And that really pisses people off. Don't worry, be happy. But I'm not happy. And you feel you're another failure in life. So instead of being a failure, just to try and just be at peace with things. It's okay to be grumpy. It's not against the law. It hasn't been banned yet. You won't be fined by the police. You won't have like grumpy police looking around. You're grumpy, $10 fine, please. It's allowing people to be. And so this is some of the important parts about Buddhism. You know, we use these things like holy water just to allow people to be and bring a bit of happiness and peace in life. So I was sprinkling everybody with this holy water, And the idea of water touching your skin, you know, is actually really quite pleasant. And especially it was a warm day this afternoon. Just getting a little bit of water to cool you down. Number one, it makes you mindful of your physical body. Straight away. So all the thoughts, all the worries in the offices, and all the fears, now you're back in your body, feeling just water on your body. It makes you, what I say, alive again. You know, in mindfulness training, a lot of times that people start to encourage your awareness of your body just by touch, by physical feelings. And water actually does that immediately. It brings you back into this moment. It feels this body, and it's a very pleasant feeling to have a little bit of sprinkling of water. So straight away, it is a meditation tool to get people to be in this moment and to get people to delight in this moment with the experience of water being sprinkled on their head. I know that sometimes when I do holy water blessings, you know, people actually just wear hats and they try and cover themselves up. What are you afraid of? What's wrong with water? Kids are great. When I do holy blessings with water, you know, the kids are so accepting of it that they just start laughing and giggling. And the more they laugh, the more water I give them. And if you've seen me soaking kids in Bodhinyana Monastery, I mean, they've got full right to sue me for abuse, but they never do because they love it and they come back for more every time. And it's the same when I do the holy water blessing. This is actually for mindfulness, to get you sort of in this moment and get you delighting in this moment rather than being grumpy, you know, being upset or being sort of, you know, in your problems. It brings you into this moment. Life is not so bad. But also, I love doing this. You know, it's part of the Buddhist training. In every festival we do, if ever you come to a festival like a Waisak ceremony or the rains retreat entry or the Katina ceremony, these Buddhist ceremonies, I really get into this, as you all know, with my swishing water all over the place. And a lot of times, it brings a lot of happiness and joy. Why? It is because it brings you into this moment. It's a bit over the top. Sometimes life is a bit too restrained. And I'm not restrained when I use the holy water. I really go for it, and I enjoy it, and you enjoy it too. Sometimes our traditions just make it just too soft, too restrained, not enough energy, not enough eccentricity in life. Even when you come here, you all have to wear, you know, the old type of clothes over here. Can't we do something eccentric over here? You know, just wear a Batman outfit the next time you come in here, Mrs. President. Because sometimes we're just so restrained. And that's not like being alive. Have you ever noticed when you do something a bit weird, you actually do feel much more sort of alive, aware, and in life? So because of that, there's, you know, sometimes when I do the holy water blessing, I really do it eccentric. It's the same with those of you who've ever been to one of my retreats. At the end of the retreats, or end of any talk, when people do the three sadhus, I've seen this too often in Buddhist temples. Sadhu means like, it's like a way of clapping. It's a way of saying, well done. It's an old Buddhist word, meaning, you know, congratulations, sadhu. And I've seen many people, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And that is depressing. So those of you who've been to our temples, you see they go, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now, you laughed at that, didn't you? Can you see that eccentricity gives you a little bit of happiness? You're putting energy into what you're doing. And now I've been teaching that for such a long time. Anyone who comes to Bodhinyana Monastery, there's a couple of really eccentric people staying at our monastery right now, and the sadhus coming from downstairs after the meal offering and just make everybody laugh, even me. Thank you so much. You make me happy. Now you can see just how religion should be a bit eccentric. Should actually be encouraging people to be that happier, that laughter. Does any of you remember reading that book about Patch Adams? The doctor who was really eccentric, who would dress up as a fairy when he went to take someone's temperature, a guy with a beard and just dressing up in fairy costume. Now, that was so eccentric that people actually got healthier and happier. know, their sicknesses actually, you know, recovered much quicker than normal, simply because of that degree of happiness and aliveness in their sort of their hospital beds. So this is, I understand this because I've been a meditator for such a long time, 45 years. I know how the human mind works, and I do need know that it's sometimes life can be so depressing, and it can be so sort of hard. A bit of lightness just brings so much joy, health, happiness, and peace in the life. So that's why I love doing this holy water. But then people say, well, it's only water. It's not just water. It's what you make it to be. And I really put a lot of energy when I make holy water. And my holy water, these are true stories, was so popular once that there was one lady here, some of you may remember her, she died some time ago, it's Poonsup, you may remember her. She was sick, you know, she was in a wheelchair, and so she asked for a bucket of holy water every Saturday. And I'm a very compassionate monk, I don't care how long it takes. I made a whole bucket, you know, was it 20 litre bucket of holy water every Saturday? And I thought, well, she needed it because she was really sick. Until I got a phone call at Bodhinyana Monastery. It was a Chinese man. He said, can I get some of Ajahn Brahm's holy water? I said, yeah, of course you can. And they said, how much do you charge? I said, we don't charge anything. He said, yes, you do. He said, no, we don't. What are you talking about? Well, I get it from this lady, Poonsup. And I want to cut the middleman out and get it from the source. So what she was doing, she was getting 20 litres of holy water, taking it home, putting it into small bottles, and flogging it. And she was making a lot of money because the rumour was going around Perth, this is very powerful holy water, the best holy water you can get in the whole city.
I was being exploited, so that was the end of her buckets of holy water. Now you get it for free.
But I really put a lot of effort into it. In other words, there is such a thing as a power of the mind. And I have that power, so I can put some energy into that holy water. And then actually, when I sprinkle it, just it has some effects on people. I don't know that sometimes people think, oh, prove it scientifically. Look, that's not the right way. I just gave a talk at the Australian Institute of Physics last week. That's why I was away in Sydney. And it was a nice thing to do because this was in the CSIRO offices in Sydney. And there's physicists there and just a monk as well. You know, like, you know, going into these places where you can introduce something else. Because science is brilliant, science is great, but it's not enough. Science is like working out, you know, what love is as a chemical reaction in your body. There's more to it than that, and everybody knows that. But you know, they try and understand it as best as they can in science. But there's a whole other dimension to this, which is the human mind. And I always go back to this brilliant young girl, and I was with her father a couple of weeks ago in Cambridge. He's one of my old friends from college, so we always keep in touch, and unfortunately, his daughter was married with a kid, so you know, she couldn't come and see me. But this daughter, when she was in grade one at school, that's a wonderful story. Grade one in school, I told this to the physicists. I mean, this is simple but profound. Never think that because you understand it, you know, it's not really deep. Unfortunately, that's the problem with religion, especially paths like Buddhism. Because many people, they go to these talks, and you ask, did you understand it? No, 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 but it was very deep. And then when you do understand it, oh, that can't be deep. No, look, just because it's easy to understand does not mean it's not profound. And this is one of the most profoundest little similes, how you start with something simple and you build it and build it and build it in reasonable steps, and the conclusion just changes the way you look at life. And there was a story of this 5 or 6 year old kid, grade one, a school in England. Teacher asked, what is the biggest thing in the world? My daddy, apparently said one little girl. An elephant, said a boy, just been to the zoo. No, a mountain is much bigger. Mountain is the biggest thing in the world. Now, this six-year-old, 5 or 6 year-old, she later went on to do postgrad work, post-PhD work in biochemistry in Oxford. So it just shows you just her brain was really brilliant. First year at school, she said, "Miss, my eye is the biggest thing in the world." And everybody stopped because they didn't understand what this genius was on about. "What do you mean, your eye?" So this kid in grade one said, "Well, miss, my eye can see her daddy, my eye can see an elephant, my eye can see a mountain, and so much more. If all of that can fit into my eye must be the biggest thing." That's genius. What is genius? It's just seeing things in a different way. And once you see it in that way, everything you could ever see can fit into your eye. I don't mean the human eye, the ball, but the whole sight, the sense of seeing. This is just a part of the instrument of seeing. It's your brain, your mind. All of that can fit into your eye. So your eye must be the biggest thing in the world, she said. And when I heard that, I gave her 9 out of 10, not 10 out of 10. Because I took that just the next step, which is most important. Your mind. You don't need to define the mind. You know what the mind is. Your mind can see everything your eye will ever be able to see. And much more, which you will never see, which you can imagine. It can hear, it can smell, it can taste, it can feel sensations in the body, real and imagined. And it's got its own area of the mind stuff. In fact, everything that you will ever experience, everything that you can ever know, can fit in to your mind. So your mind is the biggest thing. Not in the world, because the world can fit into your mind. Everything can fit into it. That's why it's huge. Now that's, from a simple beginning, you come across this amazing conclusion. This thing which you call your consciousness, your mind, the thing which is listening to me right now, is huge. And because it's so huge, it's so powerful. Science can fit into the mind, not mind into science. Which is why you can take something like water and mess around with it. Water is in the mind, not the other way around. And you can charge it up, and you can give it energy, and you can spread that energy onto someone else by doing a little bit of sprinkling, if you know how to do it. And because mind's a mind, that person being sprinkled can receive that energy. And it can help them. In the very least, you have, this is the very minimum power. Somebody is caring for you. A monk is looking at you and just sprinkling some water over you. That much of care has huge potential to heal, to help, to uplift. It is how impersonal is our world these days. You give a call to somebody and it's just an answer machine. You know, most of the stuff is recorded. Most of the stuff is not a real person even. It's just computer-generated voice. So much is impersonal these days. And, you know, you go into places and it's all just robotics. And this is actually something which is down-to-earth, human, water, one person to another person, just saying, "I care about you, and I really want you to be happy and healthy and well." That much is incredibly powerful. So we can use this very old ritual and give it power, give it meaning, give it something which is really effective. And it's fun as well. So already, you know, you get your mindfulness because it brings you into this moment. Ooh, you know, you get blessed with some water and you're right here and enjoying this, the stimulation of the skin with water flowing down you. And also, you know, you get the possibility of a person actually caring for you, somebody actually giving you something, and it has that power as well, which means, you know, it does actually have a lot of effect. So we use this holy water in many of our rituals in Buddhism. And it's not just some old custom which we always have to do, because whatever ritual you ever do, if it's just sending someone a birthday card, if it's like Valentine's Day. It's just, the custom is just a vehicle. It's how you make use of these things, which makes it powerful and meaningful. If it's just, oh, Christmas, I've got to send a Christmas card to my friend. Well, if I don't send it, I'll be in big trouble. That's not the point. It's actually how you do these things makes it really meaningful. You don't have to send a card on a birthday. You can send something else. You can send a gorilla with a gorillagram they used to do, who reads out a poem to you, which sometimes people do, but please don't do that here. You know, in the middle of one of my talks, a gorilla comes in, or a person in a gorilla costume, saying, you know, happy whatever it is to one of the nuns because it's her birthday or whatever. But you can see that little bit of extra, that little bit of extra care giving. It's not just the custom of a birthday, it's how you do it. And if you ever want to see how to celebrate a birthday, please come to Bodhinyana Monastery when it's somebody's birthday. There's usually, you know, Eddie, he's not here today, comes with his, yeah, he's there at the back. He comes with his harmonica and drum and just, well, he's not got a good voice, but he's got a happy voice. And it's a happiness, it's the best thing. You're not Pavarotti or you're not Mick Jagger, but, you know, you're still, you know, just the whole happiness which you give in a little ceremony like that. They just make it really over the top. And you've got Mr. Casey Wong, used to be an ex-treasurer. He dresses up in a butler suit, you know, with white gloves and a nice little bow tie. And if it's for me, he comes along with a pork pie from England, which he offers to me with great decorum. Those of you who've seen it, it's totally over the top, totally unnecessary, but it's a way we can take a little ceremony and just make it powerful, happy, fun, binding people together as a community. And holy water is similar. We've got our marriage celebrant in the back, Dennis, past president. And because he's a marriage celebrant and because, you know, I do the religious part of it, I always take the bowl of holy water, except for when he got married. Because when he got married, his wife, Heidi, you know, who's a member of our Buddhist society, she was wearing this really expensive Lisa Ho dress. And she came up to me and he came up to me, Ajahn Brahm, please, this cost me a lot of money. And if you get wet and soaked, it'll be ruined. So, and the water's not important, but see, what you give to it, that's what's really important. So I changed the holy water to virtual holy water. To concentrate it. It was so concentrated, it was dry. And so I got the swish, and I sprinkled her with fully concentrated, dry holy water, virtual holy water. So I didn't miss her dress, but still made her laugh. This is actually how we use these rituals and ceremonies in life. So, you know, if it is a wedding, it's a ceremony, okay? I mean, you're in love already. You're already committed to each other, but you're going to do it together. So you make it fun. You make it meaningful. You take some of these religious ways of doing things, and it's what you give to it. That is what is really important. So as I say with meditation, it's not what you're aware of, but how you are aware in the meditation. It's not what job you do in life. It's how you do that job. It's not even who you are, but how you do your life, not what your life is. That is really important. And that's what we do with this holy water. So when it is a marriage, I have really, really good fun because I soak the both of them. I really let them have it. And they are dripping, literally. No, water dripping all over their heads. Whatever hairdo they have before they come here, it's ruined after they've been blessed. But you know, they keep asking for more because it's fun, it's memorable. And a marriage isn't a funeral. It's not that serious, for goodness sake. You're starting a life off, and if you start a life off together with so much seriousness, you're dead from the time you begin. so you make it happy, over the top, eccentric, doing things in different ways, making it alive. Isn't that what a relationship should be? Not always doing things the same old way, not being a creature of habit where it's like dead and it's not interesting, it's not exciting. You're just like another robot. You're not a human being anymore. So do it differently. And by doing things like that, soaking people during a marriage, then they remember it. They send me the photograph. They really do remember it. Even years afterwards. And sometimes that's the only thing they remember. They don't remember their vows or what they said to each other, but they certainly remember the soaking. Gets them alive in this moment. So when we do things like this, the reason why we have ceremonies, you know, is it gives us a vehicle, but it's how we drive that vehicle. The car is not powerful, even if it's a Ferrari. It's the driver makes it powerful. It's what you put into it. And that's just what this holy water is. But I can never forget my master, Ajahn Chah, with his holy water. This is the... I've got a couple of holy water stories, I should actually say. My teacher in Thailand, you know, there was... this was years ago, okay, when Thailand was a military dictatorship. And so when a very senior general came to see my master, Ajahn Chah, I was there at the time, I saw this. And he asked for a blessing with holy water. And Ajahn Chah never had any holy water. There was no bowl of water there. So he said, come here. And just like I'm sitting a bit higher, bend down. And this general, this major general, you know, has incredible power. He put his head down and Ajahn Chah spat in his hair. And not only spat, but started rubbing it in. And I thought, you've gone too far. This is a major general in the army and in a military dictatorship. It's like doing that to Kim Jong-un in Korea. You know, that'd be dead. You'd be taken away. But it was amazing. It wasn't the fact it was, you know, spit. Now, you call it holy water. You know, it comes direct from a great monk. But it was the way Ajahn Chah did that, with so much fun, with so much kindness. And so much eccentricity. You know, no other general had ever been so lucky to get holy water like that. And, okay, here comes the other holy water stories. You know what's coming, but I'm going to do my holy water story before I do the Buddha's holy water story. If you think that Buddhism is a boring religion, and if, you know, you read things like the Bible or the Quran and you think, well, that's just no fun in it. You know, listen to this story, which is from the monk's Vinaya, actually Bhikkhuni's Vinaya. But before I tell that story, which is a real hoot, my holy water story. I was a monk in Thailand, and we used to have this tradition of meditating once a week, all night, not sleeping. Really ascetic. So imagine you've been up all night meditating. When the dawn comes up, you're really tired. And it's also when the dawn comes up, it's not fully light yet. And I needed to go to the toilet. But you're living in the jungle, so you don't go to, you know, urinate in the toilets. That's too far away. You just go into a piece of jungle and you urinate there. And you do the Asian style, you know, the Western style where you stand up, you squat down. So I was squatting down in the forest, in the jungle, early in the morning, a bit tired, so my mindfulness, my awareness was not all that strong. And urinating, I thought I was urinating on a twig, on a stick. Then I saw the stick started to move. It wasn't a stick, it was a snake. I was literally peeing on a snake. And that was a very venomous snake. And only the men can fully understand this, that the most sensitive part of a man's body was only a couple of inches away from the snake. That's very dangerous. But did that snake bite me? Of course it didn't bite me. Because this was in Thailand. It was a Buddhist country. That was a Buddhist snake. And that snake thought it was being blessed with holy water. It wasn't just ordinary holy water. It was warm too. So that snake was loving every minute of being blessed with holy water. But the grossest of stories, I never really sort of intended to say this, but I say this on retreats, And this is absolutely true. You can read this in the Tipitaka. This is the group of teachings of the Buddha collected now from the earliest times of Buddhism. And this is in the rules for bhikkhunis, for nuns. Because in those days, in the time of the Buddha, the nuns were staying in a monastery in the city, or in just in the edge of town, and early in the morning, just it was a job of one of the nuns to actually empty the latrines. Maybe they would all come into buckets, and her job was to take it to the compost pile, to pour it on the compost, or whatever they did with it. But this particular nun was lazy. Now, this is not about nuns, because monks do even worse stuff. This nun decided to be lazy. Instead of taking it to the normal place, decided to throw it over the monastery wall. It was early in the morning. She never expected someone to be directly on the other side of the wall. And this was a businessman who was going to the king's palace to try and get some work for his company. And there, because he was going to see the king, he was actually dressed in his very, very best clothes. And as he was walking along, thinking about, you know, how to negotiate a deal with the king in the palace, a bucket of shit fell on his head. This is actually in there. Read it. It's there. And he was very upset, as you could well imagine. He knew where it came from, you know, from the nuns' monastery. And in those days, they didn't have electricity or street lights. They had little torches, you know, like flaming sort of torches with some oil or resin in it, which, you know, lit the roads. So he grabbed one of those torches from the post, ran into the monastery. "I'm going to burn this monastery down. These aren't real Buddhist nuns. Look what they've done to me." You can imagine him being angry. I mean, that's a decent cause to get angry when you've got well-dressed and somebody throws a bucket of that stuff all over you. And as it happened, they had a gatekeeper who saw him running in. He said, "What's wrong with you? Why are you running in? I'm going to burn this monastery down. Look what they've done to me. This is hopeless. This is terrible." And then the man who was the gatekeeper said, "What do you mean that you have been blessed by one of the nuns? What do you mean blessed? These are holy nuns in there. This is even better than holy water." He said, "Look, listen, he said, "go home, get washed quickly, change, because this is very auspicious. It's really lucky. You're going to have some great luck today." "Really?" said the businessman. "It's not every day you get blessed with a bucket of shit from holy nuns." And this man was so gullible, he believed it. He went home, he got changed, washed, he went back to the palace, and as it happened, he got awarded this very lucrative contract by the king. You know, it was lucky, so he thought. He went to tell all his friends. He said, "Look, guys, all his business associates, if you really want to do well in business, forget the ordinary holy water and other blessings. Get the real thing." And the word got back to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Come over here, nuns." And he said, "You were very, very lucky that you got this gatekeeper who could convince this fool that being blessed with shit is auspicious. Don't do it again." And so the eighth rule in the Pajitiya section of the Bhikkhuni Vinaya, these are the rules for nuns, the eighth Pajitiya is, "Thou shalt not throw a bucket of shit over the monastery wall." It's there, you go and look at it in the library. So anyone who thinks that reading Buddhist texts is boring, you should go in there. Some great stories. But anyway, because they were human beings, people make mistakes. And I often say, when people do make mistakes, tell everyone about it. Number one, it makes people human. You know, you don't feel so bad about your mistakes. And, you know, you laugh at life. You laugh at life, you laugh at yourself, and that's very, very spiritual, healthy, increases your happiness, takes away depression, and all these other illnesses which people have. Simple things like that. So it's okay, meditate, people say, but you've got to have a base of happiness and joy first of all, otherwise meditation doesn't really bite. So we get these little stories with no holy water in the old scriptures or in my ones. But the main reason is, you have any ritual or ceremonies, whatever they are, you know, Valentine's Day or whatever, it's what you put into it. That really makes the ceremony something powerful. So don't be this like this cynic who just thinks, oh, it's just Valentine's Day, just a way of people making money. Yeah, I mean, businesses do make a lot of money with all that sort of stuff. When I was over in England, I couldn't believe they were really celebrating Halloween big time. That was not a British custom. But, you know, because there's money to be made, everyone had these pumpkins in the shops in London. I'd never seen that before. People dressed as sort of goblins or witches or goodness knows what else. But it can be great fun for kids. Why not let it happen? Why not to see if we can use these things? Use the culture, you know, the traditions of our world. The cultural traditions, they're not good, they're not bad. It really is how we make use of that. Have some fun with our kids or with our friends. Just like the holy water can. And then you understand why it is used. It's a powerful way to make sort of things like religion a bit more human, not so cerebral, because sometimes people come to these places, I've seen them, they come to Buddhist centers, and my goodness, they can think so deeply, but they can't feel. They can have this incredible knowledge, but they don't make use of it to be happy or to have joy, to have peace in their lives. They know so much, but understand so little. So sometimes some of the ceremonies which we do, like holy water, bring people down to earth. Psychologically, incredibly potent. You know that sometimes people say, oh, you know, you sprinkle this holy water on people who are sick, it's just a placebo effect. By giving it a name, placebo effect, that's not good enough. Why does placebo effect work? Why do medicines which have got no intrinsic value actually heal people? Because the mind is the biggest thing. That the mind heals. Because it has some sort of belief, some sort of inspiration, some sort of joy, some sort of happiness. That is powerful. And of course you can't measure happiness. You know, you can't see joy in an electron microscope. You know, you can't actually see inspiration. Maybe you can see the effects of inspiration in a in a brain scan, certain parts of the brain lighting up. But that's not the inspiration, that's the result of it. The brain is not the cause, what you see is the result. So here, when you understand what's really important in life, don't be so scientific and cynical. Don't be so rational. There's a place in life for the irrational, for the feelings, for the emotions. And as I mentioned in the meditation class, don't just think your way into peace, into happiness, into spirituality. Feel your way in there. The emotions are a far better guide into, you know, what is sort of peace? What is peace of mind? You can get a philosopher to write a whole book about peace of mind. You can get a PhD thesis on it. But does that really mean anything? But you feel it. It's an emotion. It's something which lives in the human mind, not in the human intellect. So once you start to get into the realm of the human mind, and you get to know your emotions, you get to be skilled in feeling rather than thinking, then you get a much greater understanding of the meaning of life, of what things like peace of mind really are. Even simple things like compassion. Recently I was scolding Buddhist monks. It's actually in the Sri Lankan temples in England, for actually doing loving kindness meditation the wrong way. They were starting to think, may all people be happy and well. May all people be free of suffering. That's not loving kindness. Because some people don't want to be happy. Some people don't want to be well. And you're forcing them. You're more control freaks. So I was telling the right way to do loving kindness meditation. And actually you feel that after a while. You know, you say these words, it sounds good. May all people be free of illness. That would be a terrible world if everyone was free of sickness. And I'll tell you why. It's unnatural. And number two, they wouldn't realize the value of health and you would have no opportunity to care for them. Being sick is a privilege. And it's an opportunity for others to show just how much they can be kind. Without sickness, the kindness in this world would not be so strong. Failure. Without failure in this world, we wouldn't have our ego checked. We would think we're just so powerful that we could achieve everything. Every time there's a failure, it brings you down to earth. You're a human being. Just say every time you have heartbreak, it's important to have that heartbreak. That's what you understand what love is. When you have grief, only then can you understand the value of life. And you can enjoy the time you have with others once you've lost someone. So much of the things we want to get rid of are just like when we wanted to get rid of all the pests, all the weeds in the forest, not realizing they were part of the ecosystem. Yeah, the flies which come out this time of year, there's a few of them over in, not as many this year because of the weather. There's a few flies in the monasteries where we live, the monks and the nuns. And when I first came, I thought, can't we get rid of these flies? But they're part of the ecosystem. If you get rid of those flies, they're irritating. The forest will be worse off for it. If you get rid of sickness, death, disappointment, failure, part of the ecosystem of the human mind, you'll be far worse off for it. We don't want too much, but a little bit of flies every now and again are very good for us, the forest. So when we say, may all beings be happy and well, we're missing the point. We say, the door of my heart is open to people whether they're happy, whether they're well. Everyone is accepted. Everyone is part of things. Everyone belongs in this wonderful thing which we call life. So we don't try and change people. That's what loving kindness for many people tended to be. May you be happy and well, by order of me. That's wrong. That's not loving kindness. That's more being a control freak. But instead we say, may all beings be free. May all beings find peace no matter what they're feeling. Well, that's more the right attitude. So this is how we, it's not what we do, but how we do it. And with holy water, like anything else, it can be great fun. Or some people get so negative. I don't want to be in a religion with all these superstitious nonsense. Prove it, Ajahn, that holy water works. I say, come and see it. And you find people laughing. That's good enough for me to create a little bit more happiness in this world. And I'm very disappointed. I never got to soak Colin Barnett this afternoon. Never mind. I will live with my regrets. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, yes, you remembered. Thank you. Okay. So any question from here, first of all, before the people overseas butt in? Yes. Oh, yeah.
20 years ago, I taught the women with cancer. I taught them belly dancing. They used to, you know, women in their 70s going through operations, and they'd come in and they'd dress up and they'd have so much fun.
Yeah.
And then on the open days, everyone would belly dance, even the dignitaries. And that was the most fun of all, to see these men
in their suits. So I'd be good at that. You need a belly to do belly dancing.
But yeah, such a privilege to be with people like that. Yes.
Exactly, make fun. Because when I was actually sprinkling at the Cancer Wellness this afternoon, one of the treasurers, she was at the back over here, be careful, you might slip. And I said, it doesn't matter if I slip, because, you know, holding a bowl and sprinkling, because my belly will be like a ball. I'd fall down and it'll bounce back up again. You know, it's just reaction and counter-reaction. So that's one of the benefits of, you know, having a belly. If you fall over, boom, and you're back up again.
Oh, well, you'd be very good at belly dancing then.
Yes. This is not belly dancing, this is belly bouncing. So I'm a belly bouncer. Yeah, question over here, yeah. Yes. Good, possible. Pass it down over here. Very good. And then we do the one from overseas, yeah. Here we go.
Okay, Ajahn Brahm, generally this holy water is collected in a jar and then kept aside when monks are chanting. Chanting. So is there any mention in the Buddhist literature about the spiritual value of the holy water, other than the fun side you said?
Yeah.
Is there any mention?
Not really. There's no real mention in the original teachings of the Buddha. It's something which came up after the time of the Buddha, but we still make use of it because it's helpful. It makes the ceremonies a bit more fun. And again, the nice part, which, again, how you make use of it, the nice part about the holy water is when you are sprinkled, it does actually make you very mindful. You come into the present moment. People may be daydreaming about all sorts of stuff, whack, and they get soaked. And they soon come into this moment. They forget about, you know, all the problems in their life because they're right here. So much of the problems in life is because we think about them. You know, it hasn't happened yet. It may be not happened. Or it happened in the past. It's a long time ago. That brings you into this present moment where life actually is. You're feeling the body alive, wet. That by itself is very spiritual. But, you know, the chanting, keeping it aside, giving it power, depends upon the monks. You know, there are such things as powers and stuff. And, you know, you can put some power into that water. And that's why people could sell it for such a lot of money. But, no, we've got a business now. Because sometimes holy water, sending overseas is very expensive. So we use, dehydrated holy water. We send it overseas. And you can add water to make holy water powder. I'm only joking, we don't do that. But I should make an announcement to you that, you know, in these talks which I give here, every now and again you do say something which is thinking outside the box. And too many women especially have come and told me so that their husbands, their boyfriends keep on forgetting things, important things like birthdays or the time when you first met or, you know, an appointment, you know, with your mother-in-law and stuff. And so I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to get an app, you know, because it's all about apps these days, to remind your boys about, you know, important things to do. And I said that some time ago, you know, remind your boyfriend, you know, app. Someone's actually done that. And they've been staying at our retreat center the last couple of weeks, and we launched it yesterday. And it is, the app is called Do It Honey. And you girls, you can get the app, and it just sends an SMS or something to your boyfriend or to your husband, pick up the washing as you come home, or pick up the dry cleaning, whatever it is. Or, you know, it's your mother-in-law's birthday tomorrow, buy some flowers. And that actually stops you actually a lot of suffering and a lot of divorces. And so the guy who did this, he's got his own IT company in Chennai. And so, you know, he's done it. And it's there. It was launched yesterday. And he said the first $10,000 goes to the Buddhist Society. Isn't that nice? So please download it. Use it. Tell your friends. Do It Honey. And it means your boyfriend, he remembers to pick you up at the right time. He never forgets because you've got the app to tell him. So sorry, boys. You're out of luck now. You have to do it. It was my fault. So sometimes some of the crazy ideas you have here, actually, they work. Okay, from overseas, where's Christina gone? We ever get questions from overseas? I thought today to give precedence to those over here. Only one question from Germany. In terms of enlightenment, when one begins to see, does it mean that if one starts laughing during meditation and no thought state, one has reached a temporary state of enlightenment? You wouldn't call it temporary state of enlightenment when you're laughing during a meditation, but it does mean that you have some joy and happiness, and that's really, really important in life. A lot of times that people laugh when they see the absurdity of the human condition, which means that they're getting some insights. I often notice whenever I laugh at a cartoon in the newspaper, it's always because I'm laughing at myself. I'm seeing something in myself, you know, which is a little bit ridiculous, and seeing it in a new way, and that creates a lot and lot of happiness. So a lot of laughter. You find that many comedians are incredibly intelligent people. They see things in a different way, and we recognize what they see, and it makes us all laugh. So laughter is part of insight. And sometimes that when you are doing meditation and no thought state and you laugh, you wouldn't call it enlightenment, but it's a great insight. You've got a choice in life, to laugh or to get upset. And that's why that just I was at his temple just last weekend. One of the reasons I go to KL, because there was a great monk, he was a good friend. He used to come here and I respect him a lot, Dr. K. Sri Dhammananda. He did many books. And he was a monk. He stands out for me. He died a couple of years ago. When his oncologist, I met his oncologist in Malaysia, when his oncologist told him that his illness was terminal, really terminal, nothing more they could do, he had cancer or something or other, he laughed. He burst out laughing when he was told that he was terminal. And that was the only person, this doctor, this cancer specialist, said ever laughed when he was told he was terminal. Most people said, oh no, isn't there something you can do, or cried or something. But he decided, why not laugh? And he did. So that's, you know, a sign of great insight. You're not afraid of death, why not laugh? You're out of here soon, woohoo! So anyway, that's a great monk. Yeah? Thich Nhat Hanh is quite ill. Is he laughing?
I'm not sure. He's
laughing all the way to the coffin. That's my joke. And when I die, listen in my coffin. And you might hear. Why not? You're dead anyway. You might as well make people laugh. And I must say that, because I do many funerals, the most... It's becoming more and more popular. Just, you know, people play songs at funeral services. Maybe it's just my generation, but when they die, so many of the funeral services now, just after they commit the coffin and it goes down to be burnt or buried, and when we walk out, the last song is Monty Python's Look on the Bright Side of Life. That's right, you're whistling, well done. Which means that people go out with happy, remembering you with joy, and also just, you know, looking on the bright side of life, even in places like death. It's not death, it's just what you make of it. It's not sickness, it's just what you make of it. The holy water, the most important thing, is what you make of it. And it's a story about the whole of life. Just, you use these things, these traditions, to make something beautiful out of it. Happiness, joy, peace, kindness. And that is the meaning of spirituality. So thank you again for those questions, and especially from overseas. We can now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha by bowing, and it's what you put into the bowing makes it happy. And then we can go and have a cup of tea.